if you've never been here before, and about our show. This is the Angel Rock. What my show is about is showcasing wonderful everyday people that are making a positive impact on the rest of the world and whatever the kind of work that they do, what they put out there, that whether it imparts information, whether it makes a change in one way or the other, that's what the show is about. I'm in Canada. I'm a psychic medium. I'm a crystal Reiki energy healer, Akashic Records practitioner, spiritual teacher and mentor, also registered nurse. And tonight I have such a special guest. I'm going to get into his bio, but the other thing I want to remind you before I forget, please come on over to YouTube. I'm going to be keeping an eye on the chat there. That's where you can ask questions, comments. I like to make you part of the show, so I keep an eye on that, as well as we are also now on Twitch under the UFO Paranormal Network. If you saw my banner, the link, I just updated it in the last hour, so everybody should have got that. And my guest tonight, I have been trying to have this wonderful man on for almost 2 years, and then he told me he almost had something happen 5 hours ago, so I'm so glad that it worked out. His name, and I'm going to read you a little bit about his bio, so give me a sec here. I have all my little notes. He's so professional. He made my job so easy. So his name is Gavin Lee Davies. He's a worldwide best-selling author of The Haunted Horror of Havard West and Ghost Sex, The Violation. I can't wait. We've talked about this on this network before. He's also, it said he's born in 1975. He doesn't look like it. In Pembrokeshire, West Wales. So we're from all over. We're broadcasting from New Orleans. I'm in Canada. He's in Wales. He's studied hauntings in 19th century literature. He's also host of the Paranormal Chronicles podcast. He's got a brand new book out tonight that we are going to be talking about, because he's got quite a, I do also want to add, his investigations have been presented in book form and have sold over 125,000 copies and have been number one bestsellers in 7 different countries. He says he's got a passion for the paranormal. I'm not going to keep reading because I want to introduce him, and I know we got lots to talk about. Welcome, Gavin.
Laura Lee, we finally done it. Look at that. 2 years ago, pretty much to this very moment, we were connecting, and I was house-sitting a very old rickety haunted house, and the power went. And then the power went today, and I thought, we are jinxed. But thank you so much to you, this wonderful network, and all your amazing listeners. And you were saying about being on YouTube and Twitch, and I would love tonight to hear people's comments, experiences, theories, interpretations of some of the things we are talking about. But Lorelei, you look amazing.
Oh, thank
you. You look fantastic. And I hope you and your family are keeping safe. And I hope everybody out there, wherever you are listening in the world, you are keeping safe. It is a great honor, and it's very humbling to finally be on this amazing show.
Well, I'm so glad to have you here, and I'm really excited about the new book that you've got. I just want to say hi. We got Zach Mann, who is in the YouTube chat. I also forgot to tell you guys, how could I forget? We have premium content, and it's affordable on YouTube. Zach is one of our members. So you become a member, you get all kinds of special stuff from all the different hosts on UPRN. I believe we have almost 50. So you're going to get all kinds of stuff. Some people put classes in there. There's special shows, special interviews, all kinds of stuff. We're just starting that out. So Zach does say, and I know Zach knows you from our good friend Jason Bland's Paranormal.
Hello, Zach. Yes, Zach called in on a different show.
On Jason's show. Oh, I mentioned Jason's show in here all the time, because you know what? He's
great.
Been so good to
amazing
me
guy.
With the paranormal stuff that we had. And like I said, I support him. I share a lot of the calls I made into his show with the EVPs that have come through, because we shared our story on Paranormal Survivor. But he did say, I want to say what, so of course, my phone turned. He says, good evening, everyone. Listening, having fun here in Coral Springs, Florida. Zach, what are you doing over there? He lives in Arizona. Must be on vacation.
And can I say, Lorelei, can I just say, if Jason Bland is listening right now, maybe you need to ask Lorelei how to say Haverford West, Jason, because she nailed it straight away. She said it perfectly. Jason got it so wrong. He started swearing at me. I think, Lorelei, you are half Welsh. I think deep down there's some Welsh blood in you.
I actually do have relatives, not from Wales, but Scotland, England, Belgium. All of my family and my grandfather was French on my dad's side. So my last name in French is Podvin. In English, it's Podvin. And the translation, jug of wine.
Well, Haverford West, where I live, was founded about 900 years ago based on a huge flooding disaster that happened in Belgium. Mm-hmm. And the king gave a bit of land over here for the refugees to come and start again. So Haverford West is based on Belgium refugees.
Wow.
So we could be related.
6 degrees of separation. I'm going to have you back because I want to talk about your previous book, but I know this is your newest book. So first of all,
I will talk about anything because it is such an honor to be here.
Well, this isn't the first time I'm going to have you. I know that.
Yeah, I know
the
that.
The one thing I do want to add, because I appreciate that, I got into some of the copy that you sent me of Harvest, the story of, it says the true story of alien abduction, sorry, I don't have my glasses on, was that you dedicated it to a good friend of all of us of the paranormal community, Kevin Malik. And my heart and love go out to his wife, Jennifer Malik. I've worked with her previous network and was truly, truly shocked when that happened. And I thought that was so beautiful that you dedicated the book to him.
Jennifer and Kevin, right? Not a lot of people know this. When I started up 7 years ago, I didn't have a publisher. I didn't, I'm just a guy. I'm just a dyslexic guy who's bipolar, who's had a mini stroke from Wales. And I started 7 years ago, self-published, didn't have any marketing or publishers or publicists behind me. And it was Kevin and Jennifer who gave me my first ever opportunity for an interview, okay? And I was terrified. And they from the get-go, from the first 5 minutes, those two treated me like they'd known me forever. They were respectful. They challenged me to the degree where it was useful, but not to the degree that it was like bullying or making it difficult. And I just loved them a bit. And last year when Kevin passed away, it was just huge shock. And I got in touch with a publisher and I said, can I ask a huge favor? And I said, yeah, what? And I said, can we dedicate this to Kevin Malik? He meant a lot to me. And they knew he meant a lot to me to interrupt the process of the production of Harvest. And it does. And my thoughts and prayers go out to Jennifer and his family and every fan of Kevin and Jennifer's work, because they were good people gave a lot of opportunities to people like me. They opened a lot of doors, and I will never ever forget the people who helped me. People like you with the magazine, people with you with your support on when I was on Paranormal Soup with the wonderful Jason Bland, Kevin and Jennifer Malik. There were so many people who gave me that opportunity, and I never forget. So thank you to anyone who's ever supported me. Truly humbled to have you as part of my journey into the paranormal world.
Well, you are definitely on the right network, because this actually, that's why it's called UFO Paranormal Network. We used to be called that on United Public Radio Network. I want to give a huge shout out to Joe Montaldo, who owns the network, and he's my producer. He's not just mine, he's all of ours. I don't know how he does what he does, because he runs a construction business all day long. He produces all of us, makes it look so easy. We had a quick chat. We had a hard time getting Gavin in here, so that's why we're a few minutes late, guys. But Joe runs ICAR, which is the International, now I hope I get this right, International Center for Alien Abduction Research. And he's been on Ancient Aliens. Like, he is like the UFO guy. So this is the perfect place to be talking about this conspiracy. Those are all the things I talk about, like always with the positive spin, because you usually don't hear these topics always talked about that way. But let's start at the beginning, Gavin. So before we get into your book, what got you into the paranormal? I always ask my guests that.
Well, this is the weird synchronicity of everything. Everything comes full circle.
That's right.
So a lot of people are familiar with my previous works, Haunted Horror of Haverford West, which you nailed perfectly. Just saying that to Jason Bland if he's listening, right? And probably more recognizable and more infamous was my bestseller Ghost Sex to Violation, which was a study into spectrophilia. I spent a long time with a lady who claimed to have been sexually abused by a ghost and a demon. And I went in with a psychologist and we spent a long time interviewing them, going a psychological route and doing an investigation. So anybody who's not familiar with me, I'm not a sensitive, I'm not a medium, I'm not gifted like a lot of people out there are. I'm interested, I'm enthusiastic, and I've had a background in sales, marketing, newspapers, and print, okay? Mm-hmm. So basically what I am is I will spend a long, long time with individual subjects, interviewing them about their alleged paranormal encounters, mm-hmm. and then just spending years and years putting it all together, cross-examining witnesses, going back to the subject, trying to look for, you know, different avenues where we can present the story, find out a little bit more detail. Then I bookend it with some rationale, some possible explanations. And what I do is I then give you that book and I want you to decide if this, you know, what you think of it. It's not up to me to say, right? I'm not like, I love the paranormal. I'm very much invested in it. I'm very enthusiastic, but I'm not like an expert, like say you are or Joe is. You know, I would love, and Joe, if you are listening, please, please, can I ask a huge favor? Can you read Harvest, The True Story of Alien Abduction? Because I would love, really, like your take and interpretation on it, because there's a lot of surreal moments. Yeah, and I would really appreciate that. Get in touch with me, okay? So that's kind of like what I do. I kind of like, I'm a paranormal journalist.
Okay.
I'm an investigator, but not in the realm of going out with a night vision camera, shout and show yourself and getting scrams and stuff. I just basically just sit with a subject and get as much information. So my route began when I was around 10 years old.
Okay.
And in school, primary school, only little kids like 9-10 years old. And every Friday afternoon in the summer, we'd be there just lying there, the breeze coming in, the sun coming through the windows. And our lovely old little teacher would be reading us books like Roald Dahl, and just nice children's books, you know.
Right.
And then one day she decided to read us a book called The Uninvited, which was about a family that lived down the road, like literally 5-10 miles from my house, mm-hmm. who were the epicenter of a prolonged assault by what we could only describe to be alien beings. There's more popular consensus now that maybe it's dimensional beings. So that absolutely terrified me. And I went home and I was very upset. And my father said, you know, what's going on? He came in to reassure me. And I said, you know, misread this book about aliens. They're attacking people down the road. And he said, look, have you ever seen a ghost? And when I was around 4, I had an imaginary friend. And I used to describe him. He had a top hat. He had like a waistcoat and he smoked a pipe. And he was a really cool guy. I can't remember much about him, but he seemed really cool. Until one night, the adults could smell tobacco and saw in the corner of the room a Victorian gentleman in a top hat materialize. And it turned out that he was an old gambler who owned the mill that we were living in. It had been reconstructed into housing. And he committed suicide and he never left. But I used to talk to this guy as a kid. You know, I didn't know any different. I was 4. So my dad said, did he hurt you? Did he do anything wrong to you? I said, no, he was nice, you know. And he said, like, it's the living that will do you the harm, not the dead. And then he said, have we ever seen a UFO? And when we were about 7, we were walking this lane and we saw this bright light come through the clouds and then just shoot up. Mm-hmm. And my dad grabbed my hand. We ran. And I said, yeah, we were scared. And he said, no, we weren't scared. We just wanted to get back to watch the football match. You know, we were in a rush. I said, no, we were terrified. You know, you were running, you know, my strong, fit father at that age. And he encouraged me to explore the unknown and to, you know, really explore it, be inquisitive about it, not to be frightened about it, because he said, if there is more to this world, then it makes it a much more exciting place. And like, he also, not only did he teach me that it was okay to explore the paranormal, it was my first lesson in cynicism, in that people will do you the most damage. And from there, I started investigating. Now, if we go back further, right? So before that moment where my teacher was reading us that book, right. In my little sleepy county of Pembrokeshire, It's this big, rugged rock sticking out into the sea. Very large, very densely populated. If anybody wants to see what Pembrokeshire looks like, head over to my Instagram, The Paranormal Chronicles, and there's lots of pictures of the coast and the fields and the mountains and the castles and all that good stuff, okay? And in from 1976 to about 1982, Pembrokeshire was the UFO hotspot and capital of the world, right? And I bet Joe knows a lot about this, right? And the main story that came out of that was on February the 6th, 1977, in Broadhaven, a little seaside town, little village, 16 pupils aged from the ages of 9 and 11 claimed to see a cigar-shaped silver object with a dome struggling to clear some trees. And now these children were very excited by this. So they ran inside, they told their teacher, one of the teachers went to have a look, and the headmaster, Ralph Llewellyn, he called in all the children and sat them down in exam conditions and asked them to draw and write down what they'd seen. And pretty much all of it was identical. It was a cigar shape, silver with a dome. Some of the kids thought they saw, lights on it. Some of them thought they saw people moving around in it. So the story is quickly dismissed that the children had seen a sewerage truck because there was a sewerage works not far. So one of the teachers went there and said to the supervisor, look, were you in our field by the school with one of your trucks and machineries? And they said, no, we couldn't get there. So very quickly, it made national and international news. And it was covered all over the world. Investigators from all over the world came to Pembrokeshire. The Coombs family, the people from the Uninvited book, they were the epicenter of this prolonged assault. And some of the events that happened to this family were that they were chased by an orange light in their car, and the car ended up losing power, and they had to freewheel to the farmhouse. They saw a 7-foot spaceman at the farmhouse window. The policeman said he's investigated rapes and murders and he's never seen a family so terrified in their life. A shed full of cattle moved 5 miles in 30 seconds, right? And all of these things happened. So if we fast forward now to 2013, I'd written my first book, which would go on to be the basis of Haunted Horror of Halford West. I just finished the investigation on GoSex, The Violation, which was very brutal and graphic and very rough, very depressing. It took a huge toll on me. You know, how do you go back and make love to your girlfriend when you spent 6 months dealing with alleged paranormal sexual violation? You know, so I wanted to do something that was a little bit less taxing. You know, something a little bit interesting, but wouldn't pull me in too deep. So I thought I would start investigating the events that got me into the paranormal. And go back to the 1970s and 80s and investigate that UFO flap. But as life would have it, my life is never that easy. And then that is when Susan, who is the subject of Harvest, the true story of alien abduction, came into my life.
Wow. So this just sort of happenstance. And before I even ask you that, I have to let you know, I have great respect for what you do, because I really do, for anybody, whether they discuss conspiracy or anything that's not mainstream. I call it the paranormal because it's not considered the norm, right?
Yeah.
But you don't tell people what to believe. It's an impetus for somebody, if it kind of resonates, something that you've spoken about, maybe to do a little bit more of their research, open that doorway to speak about maybe their own experience. And the reader, it's up to them to make up their mind. And I love that, because the other thing that I think is so important, we need, we had almost 11-year experience. I am writing a book. I'm writing 3 books. But the thing is, a lot of people aren't doing that, and they need somebody that's able to openly and objectively hear their story and then be able to share that story with the rest of the world. And that's somebody like yourself. I love that you said you're a paranormal journalist. I love it. I really have a lot of respect for your work.
Yeah, I'm objective. Like, I don't go out with the motive of dismissing anybody. And at the same time, I don't go out to pander to the skeptics. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you're skeptical and you're watching this, right, I have the uttermost respect for you. If you've had your own experiences and accounts, I have the utmost respect for you as well. The people who I have no time for are the ones who will come into your comments box on Facebook or on YouTube and go, what a load of BS, what a load of rubbish. And I will say to those people with a lot of conviction, what do you base that on? So when people make fun or poke fun or try and troll Harvest or Ghost Sex Violation or Haunted Horror of Halford West, I say to them, oh, where did you get your PhD in quantum physics from? Where did you get your doctorate in psychology from? And guess what? They shut up because they've been fed, they've been force-fed what the media have allowed us to know.
Oh, don't even get me started on mainstream media.
but times are changing, right? Because it used to be, right, people like you, like me, like Joe, you know, probably people like Zach who's listening, and all your listeners and viewers, right? We kind of are like in the closet when it comes to our paranormal experiences. You don't want to go up to your boss in work or a girl you're meeting on a date for the first time and go, oh yeah, by the way, I've been abducted by aliens, I've been sexually violated by a ghost. Yep. Or I've been inflicted by a prolonged paranormal haunting that has made me an alcoholic, because that our culture, especially in the West, will immediately identify and label and judge you as a conspiracist nut, fantasist, delusional, just somebody crying out for attention, right? And the sad thing is, right, we live in this wondrous universe with so many different layers of possibility. Like literally 45 minutes before I came on your show, there was a news announcement that they have found, they have proof there is water on the moon, right?
I believe that. Oh, yeah.
They found it. And NASA found water on the moon, right? Which means we can now go to the moon, build a base. We don't have to bring water up there. And then we can use the moon as a jumping pad into the rest of the solar system.
Need to meet? He's taking a break right now. And I usually have him on regularly. His name is Dan Willis. He is an American that lives off the grid with his wife, Rebecca. They're scientists. He served in the U.S. Navy. He also was an expert witness. I believe he was one of 20 scientists back on May 9th, 2001. They testified before Congress. This was supposed to be world news to the existence of extraterrestrials on Earth. 57 different varieties. At that time, they had proof. They had video. They had eyewitness accounts. They had pictures. And the press was all there. It was somewhere in New York, I think at the New York Press Club. I always get it mixed up, but he's on a couple of my past podcasts. And what happened was, at the end of the day on mainstream media, there was like a 15-20 second blurb of, oh, some people believe that there's life or there's aliens exist. But what he says is that we've never needed rocket ships. We've never needed any of these things. And he's got the proof for it. If you go through his website, I wish to God I had 6 months to do it. He's gone all the way back to 1900 and connected all the dots through history that have been changed, put them all together. The wealth of knowledge in there, including one of the scientists he worked with, because he used to work with Marcel Vogel. It's a certain type of crystal. That's a whole show in itself. But anyways, one of the scientists in Washington, D.C. went to a scrapyard, found a piece of Tesla's old technology, had no clue what it was or how to get it to work. It took him 5 years. And as Dan talks about one of my a couple of podcasts, that he somehow got it to work. And they had it pointed towards a wall. It opened a portal. Oh, I'm goosebumps even telling you, a portal, and this being came out and kind of looked at them. As he says, this being communicated telepathically, like, what the F are you people doing? Yeah. And I guess they were so shocked there was a secretary in the room. She grabbed a camera. He's got a picture of this being on his website. And he talked even about further experiments. My whole point is, he says, we've never needed any of these things. They've been kept from us.
Yeah.
And very sane, very intelligent gentleman. And I'm not doing it justice, like if you went through it. So finding water in the moon, absolutely. Or what's on the dark side of the moon. I mean, we're seeing all this stuff. It exists. I know it exists. So I don't doubt you one bit. I do want to give we got a few comments here.
Yeah.
We have a new person in our chat room. Welcome. We've got Dawn 719 listening from Washington State. Welcome. Zach has a few comments for you. He says, hey, you remembered me, Gavin. Good to see you again, brother. And yep, I'm on vacation this week. But this part, he says, and by the way, Gavin, last time you were on Paranormal Soup, my fiance said she loves your accent.
Not many people say that, Zach. Not many people say that about my accent.
I love your accent. I love your accent. To people, because it makes people, you don't think you have an accent where you live. You don't have an accent. I have an accent talking to you.
Oh, Zach, it's good to hear from you. And I hope you and your fiance are having a good vacation during these challenging times. Keep safe, Zach. It's really nice. I'm sure I'll probably see Zach again. I've got 33 interviews over the next 2 weeks. So I'm pretty sure me and Zach will probably bump into each other again.
He's a really big supporter of my shows, because I do a podcast I co-host tomorrow night on this network as well. Usually he calls in. If you want him to call, or he wants to call in, he can. What I do usually, if I've got somebody on Skype, it's easier for me to add them, except when I tried to add you tonight. Even Joe had a hard time. Or he usually calls in on Tuesday nights. So that's why I keep an eye on the chat room. And we've been trying to get people to move over to this chat room, because this is where we're building our numbers. But I don't think you were on before the show, but Joe said that the numbers on Twitch were doing amazing, because we just started last week streaming from there. And then we're also on BitTube. But I should remind you, just so you know too, Gavin, we are carried in almost 200 countries worldwide, our archives. Anywhere where there is talk radio or podcasts, you will find all the shows from UPRN. And BitTube's our newest venue that we're on. So we have people from all over the world listening. They'll hear you. They'll hear about your book. They're all kinds of things. So I'm really excited and so glad you're here tonight.
Well, can I make an offer to you and Joe then?
Sure.
Will you please, please share your shows to the Paranormal Chronicles Facebook group? I've got a really nice community. I've got a like page. There's about 38,000 people on there, but the like pages aren't as robust as they used to be. But group pages, the community is really involved. There's great authors there. Jason's on there, you know, Jeremy Scott's on there. Share all your stuff, because if I want to encourage people to join this wonderful network and community as well, because, you know, if I can support you back for this wonderful opportunity, then that's how this all works. If
this
we all
is
work
how
together,
it works, right?
We all Para work together.
Unity. Para yeah. unity. I have two groups too myself. So when you had
Angel
your
Rock.
Free paranormal magazine out there, that's how you got I recommended a lot of people to you, because we've got some beautiful people too. Everybody does. That's the beauty of social media, right? Everybody builds up. So absolutely, I know I'll share over there. But let's get into this book.
Yeah.
How did you meet Susan? Like, how did you come across her?
Before I get into that, I just want to touch on a point, because you touched on something and I think it's really, really important, right? And this kind of like makes this even more interesting and in what's happening with Susan, as opposed to, say, 5 years ago or 6, 7 years ago in America, right? And for years, researchers claimed that the United States government was running a top secret research program to UFO phenomena. And time again, the authorities denied everything, telling the media and the public there's no official interest in the subject. And UFOs were written off as mirages, misidentifications, hoaxes, and delusions, and as best, you know, prototype aircraft and missiles, or maybe something from Russia or China. And Project Blue Book investigated over 12,000 UFO cases, right? And 701 to this day remain a complete mystery, right? So UFOs were seen by police, military, doctors, commercial aviators, politicians, royalty, like Prince Philip. I don't know if you can believe too much about him. Scientists and even presidents. But the media, they normally ignored it or ridiculed it. And that anyone who had some kind of like UFO experience was tin foil and little green men, right? And what I believe is, and I've got no proof of this, but I bet you have, and Joe, a lot of your listeners, is that the media were paid off, right? The media were paid off not definitely. To take this seriously because Project it's not Rocky part of the...
still exists.
Yeah, and it was, they were paid off, right? Mm-hmm. Not to take this seriously, right?
Yep.
Because the world governments wanted to control the narrative, right? But Mikhail Gorbachev, leader of the second most powerful nation at the time, after the United States, mm-hmm. said the phenomenon of UFOs is real and it must be treated seriously, right? Mm-hmm. And the Russians, they know the truth, and Belgium know the truth, and Japan and Australia know the truth.
Canada.
Canada knows.
Paul Hellyer, our Minister of Defense for years, and now he's what in his late 80s, early 90s, and they try and say that he's suffering from dementia, but he's been testifying to the existence of them.
Mm-hmm. But this is where Complete In Harvest, the true story of alien abduction, got really, really interesting, okay? Because in December 2017, all the conspiracy theories came true. There was an actual secret UFO project, and these objects have been tracked and chased by the best aircraft and pilots in the world, and were outmaneuvered at every opportunity by these objects, right? And this story didn't break on some conspiracy theory website or some UFO forum. It broke in a fact-checked New York Times article, right? And that article was picked up all over the world. All our mainstream papers, not the tabloids, but the mainstream, like the Guardian, the Times, the Express, the Daily Mail, they covered it in the UK as well, right? Mm-hmm. So we are now in a period of soft disclosure, right? Yeah. To the degree, in a 10-day period, from June the 22nd of this year, right? And if people think, what was happening June the 22nd? We're in the midst of the pandemic, and then there was the civil unrest in the United States, right? America, and I don't mean to make a joke, America to us looked like a scene from The Purge, right? Mm-hmm. It was just absolutely terrifying. Absolutely. And, you know, my love to everyone who lives in America, everyone in the world, okay? And on that day, June the 22nd, the Pentagon released a statement re-showing the videos, saying that they were investigating an identified aerial phenomenon, right? And they got all these fancy new names for UFOs, okay? Mm-hmm. Then, a few days later, NASA confirmed that they believe that there are 8 Earth-like planets in our galaxy at a minimum.
Yeah.
And then a few days later, scientists in the North Pole, or it might have been the South Pole, double check that, got the first ever evidence that there is a parallel dimension working in reverse to our own, right? They found particles operating in reverse that ours work. So in 10 days, all of that news came out, and probably people who aren't, you know, viewers and fans of the show, ordinary people, like, you know, people who aren't interested in the subject, they probably didn't even know. The soft disclosure has begun, okay? So what made us really interesting now, looking back when I first met Susan came to me and she wanted to talk about stuff that had happened in the 70s and 80s, maybe on behalf of a grandparent or parent, because she was young. She was in her 20s in 2014, sorry. And I met this woman in a coffee shop in public, and she was very tall, very beautiful, very elegant, but wore very like loose fitting clothing, and a very hunched girl. Like, she was very self-aware that she was tall. And she was one of the most articulate and intelligent people I've ever spoken to. And very quickly realized that she wasn't here to talk about stuff that happened in the 70s and 80s for my research, for my book that was going to cover that period of time. But she was talking about something very contemporary that happened to her. And I quickly realized that, you know, it's very difficult to discern what is fact, what is fiction, what is somebody pulling my leg, someone having a hoax. But very quickly, I discerned that this woman, there was something, she was very sullen, there was something, she was weighed down by a lot of baggage. And so I began the process of interviewing her, and what happened to her just absolutely startled me. And I thought, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but I am, because at the time, just, you know, we were all in the closet, like, you know, it's not, you know, we were all in the closet of, we would talk to safe people about paranormal new UFO events. And you talk to people about paranormal events and they go, oh, I don't believe in that rubbish. But one day I saw a UFO. When my mum died, I saw her at the bottom of the stairs that the minute she died. And it's like, so you don't believe, yet you've had all these paranormal experiences. And when you look, when you talk within your family networks and your community networks, you realize the majority of you have had some kind of paranormal experience. Whether you've seen a UFO, a ghost, you have some kind of empathic or psychic or mediumship abilities, you are in tune with beings such as angels, demons, aliens, whatever. And I thought this was very, very interesting case with Susan in Harvest, A True Story of Alien Abduction. But then it absolutely terrified me. And what Susan was trying to do is, like a lot of people out there, she wanted that catharsisism to get it off her chest and not be judged and labeled. She'd read my other books and she believed that I'd tackled them very sensitively and very factually, in terms of I never sensationalized stuff. You can read my books, guys. You're not gonna have pea soup and women crawling up the walls like spiders and beds spinning around the room. The paranormal isn't necessarily like that. The paranormal is very subtle to begin with. And then it kind of builds and builds and then manifests into something very powerful and to some people, very frightening. Now, you touched on something at the beginning, Laura Lee, and I thought that was amazing. You were saying about, you know, there is a spectrum of experience when it comes to the paranormal, okay, and especially alien abduction. The whole UFO mythology is like an onion. The more layers you peel off, the more you will find, right? Yeah. More than ghosts and demons and things of that nature, because you pull out a layer and then you've got conspiracies about aircraft and drones, Nazis living in the Antarctic, hollow earth, time travelers, you know, you name it. There's all these different layers. And then it's all wrapped. It's an enigma wrapped in a riddle, wrapped in a lie, wrapped in a truth, wrapped in just a big smog. And you're just trying to get to that truth, right? But with the paranormal, especially alien abduction, this spectrum, you have incredibly positive experiences where people have felt they've had a spiritual enhancement from having a close encounter. So I bet many of your listeners and viewers tonight, they've had positive ET encounters, right? And there's lots of examples of that. But then as you start to shift across that spectrum, right, you start getting into the abductions, you start getting into the experimentation, you start getting into the hybridization, and then you get to the harvesting. And that's what Susan's story was based on. She believes that she is part of an ongoing process which will eventually lead to her being completely harvested. And she claims she has seen thousands of women on board some kind of vessel, which is almost factory abattoir-like, and she saw the most horrific things ever. And the thing that really interested me about Susan, number one, she tried to rationalize everything. She didn't want it to be true. She's not sat here talking to you now. She's not talking to Netflix about a film. She's not sat to Oprah crying her heart out saying she's had these terrible experiences, getting big endorsements. She's backpacking around Australia right now because she doesn't believe she's going to be alive to see her 40th birthday. And this is one of the most fundamentally rational people. Susan, she was on the trajectory. She was on the path to a great life. She was studying to be in a very, very good profession. She was from a professional family, which were all in the same line of business. They weren't religious. The paranormal certainly wasn't on their radar. They didn't sit around talking about Bigfoot and Yetis and aliens and ghost sex. That was not on their radar. They're very rational people. And she had that roadmap to success. She was born with a silver spoon and a silver platter. And all she had to do was complete her higher education. She'd get the car, she'd get the office, she'd get the job, the income, the good-looking fella, the kids, the house, the holidays. She was set for life. And then this happened, and nothing was the same again.
You know what, though, I wanted to add, though, Gavin, when you said you're sure about my listeners, the interesting thing that I've been getting is the one thing I said, I don't want to work with dark, negative things. I have had narc. That's all people, a lot of people contact me about. I have seen somebody, their face completely change, elevate on the screen in front of me, something I truly believe was demonic. And then lately I've been getting a lot of readings, people contacting me, wanting to know. One person was calling it a vision. Some people have called it a dream, whatever it is. The one that really freaked me out, and I do appreciate Joe because I can ask him to bounce a few things off him. He never always gives me the answer. He just gives me a little food for thought or a few breadcrumbs to find the answers. But what they had said to me was, I've had this vision. And in these visions, she said, I've been abducted. I'm on a spaceship. And as she started to explain it to me, it was like, I swear to God to you, she was projecting the image into my head. And I don't think she knew this. And the other thing I've noticed too, I wanted to bring up, she's had a near-death experience. I find a lot of people have had near-death experiences. I don't know if that unlocks the gift or it's the alien encounters as well. But anyways, to continue on with the story, she said, I was laying on this table. As she just started to describe the beings, I found the picture immediately on Google. She goes, that's exactly what it looked like. It was like she showed me the picture in my mind. Then, as she said, she was laying on the table and she mentioned there were stirrups, and all of a sudden my stomach dropped. Oh my God, I know what she's going to tell me. And she proceeded to tell me that, and I'll try and change the details because I'd never give away somebody's personal information, that they had relations. It was the best relations they'd ever had. And I already knew she was going to tell me there was a baby. There was a baby. And then when I heard this, all of a sudden, the dread and horror that I felt left, and I kept hearing, you contracted this. You agreed to this before this lifetime. And we're still unpacking it and unraveling it all. But this is the kind of things I'm hearing, harvesting, you know, sometimes organs being taken. And like I said, I'm getting goosebumps. That's always my sign for truth. It's not cold in here. So I'm dying to hear more about this story. I just want to read. We've got a few more comments here. I'm going to put my glasses on for this. So Ozak just wanted you to know, he said he's only in Florida right now. His fiance was not feeling well, didn't want to come to Florida with him. She's regretting it now because there's a cold front going through her part of Arizona. Sure, cold front. Try coming to Canada. I don't know if Wales has got winter yet, but we do.
We got storms.
Yeah, we've got cold. We've got some snow already. And then Zach just said money talks and money silences, definitely. So I'm dying to hear. And I really want to send my deepest respect, a lot of love and appreciation to you. And also to Susan for sharing her story, because this story sounds unbelievable. Believable, but unbelievable that somebody would be going through this. So I can't wait to hear more, Gavin.
Well, there's a number of points, right? Because the experience you were just saying about then with that lady, okay, right? And something you said at the beginning, there's a great book called Escaping from Eden by a fantastic author and friend called Paul Anthony Wallace. I was speaking to him today. I have his book here. It is a fantastic book, right? It's called Escaping from Eden, okay? Amazing guy. And He's basically a church minister who was brought up for years believing a certain thing about the Bible. And then when he started doing his own digging and his own interpretations, he just started seeing that everything was wrong and that there's very different interpretations. Mm-hmm. And he's gone into the mythology and history of abductions and in the Bible and some really amazing guy, right? And he claims that his belief is, and based on ancient histories and mythologies and religions and philosophies and whatnot, that there is a cabal. And I think at the beginning you were saying, or earlier on you were saying, there was like 54 different races, mm-hmm. right? Yep. That fits in really well, okay? Mm-hmm. So I can't prove that. I'm just a guy sat in Haverford West in West Wales, right?
You need to give yourself more credit. You keep saying
I'm just a guy. I'm just this guy, right? And Paul Anthony Wallace believes there's like an agenda. There's an agreement between amongst this cabal, right? And all of them have different agendas and motives, right? So you've got some aliens, and some people call them the Nords, the Blondes, whatever you want to call them, okay? They have a spiritual investment in us. And if you ever read Keith Anthony Blanchard's Homecoming book, which is a fantastic crossing the bridge to the soul, Keith Anthony Blanchard, Homecoming, he had a really amazingly positive experience. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, like it changed his life. That guy, right? You talk to Keith Anthony Blanchard for 5 minutes. He's got his own radio show, right? Oh my God, that guy's like Mr. Motivator. He's oozing positivity. He's oozing. Like you just listen to him, you get goosebumps. Yeah. You could run out in traffic and know you're never going to get run over, right? He's just this like this guru, right? And then you get people that get like stranger experience. Even Whitley Strieber in Communion, he had the anal probes and the injections. Yeah. He saw it as a spiritual development, mm-hmm. and upgrade for him. And he feels that he's been gifted. But then you get into like Susan's experience. And she saw what you were saying. She saw women lying on the ground, terrified, in this weird organic mass on this, I don't know, is it a vessel, a base? She couldn't get a sense of time or place or a perspective on this thing she was in. There was she said there was hundreds of women, possibly thousands, being led on different corridors. So the level she was on, they were rounded into a room. They're all naked women of all different nationalities, all different ages, old women, children, but they're all women, okay, being shepherded along by these like lights. And things were coming out the wall, and they were taking samples from the vaginal, anus, mouth, eyes, nose, skin samples, right? The layer below her, she said there was women naked, heavily pregnant, all against this wall, terrified, and women were just dropping to the floor and giving birth.
Yeah.
And then as soon as the baby was born, these lights would swoop down, tear the baby away, not cut any umbilical or anything like that. And then these huge, and this is what I mean, like, I can talk to you about this. I can talk to Joe about this. I can talk to your audience about this. But if I went to the newspaper said, what am I going to say next? I'd be laughed. And there was these bulbous creatures, like a bioluminescent, like fat jellyfish on very impossibly thin legs, would walk over to the exhausted mother on the floor and drop onto them. And Susan didn't know, were they being eaten? Were they being revived? Were they being implanted again? They didn't know. And on another level, there was like a cone, and there was dozens and dozens of really old women and crippled women and ill-looking women, right? And there was a machine at the bottom of this cone literally coming out, inserting themselves into these ladies, removing everything, and just leaving just some wisps of skin left. So there was all these different levels of micro harvesting from glands, samples, you know, needles, things of that, all the way to total annihilation, total harvesting. Now, people out there, you know, they might be a bit cynical and think, well, how are thousands of people on a spacecraft going missing, right? So on average, 625,000 people go missing every year in the United States, right? Okay, not all of them have been abducted. People go missing. People get murdered. People commit suicide. People go off the grid. You know, 1.4% of those 625,000 people, right, they are unsolved mysteries. 1 minute they're there, the next minute, bump, they've gone, right? Every 90 seconds, someone in the United Kingdom goes missing, an island. 30,000 people a year go missing in Australia, okay? So let's look at this logically, right? If I came into your house and I just went into your purse and I took all your credit cards and money and all your coins, right? You're going to come home and you're going to call the police, I've been robbed. If I come into your house every night and I take a dollar, you won't notice. You won't notice, right? So you think there's over 200 countries on the planet. You know, I know it's like countries like Monaco and Monaco rather than the Vatican. But if you say 200 countries, right? say these beings, whether they're dimensional beings, alien beings, I'd really like your audience to, you know, discern what they believe it is. That's really interesting. It helps me in my research. Two women from Canada go missing every night. Two from United States. Two from United Kingdom. And so on and so forth, right? That's on average 400 people a night, right? That's right. 2,000, just over 2,000 people a week. That's 200,000 people a year. That's nearly 2 million people a decade. And then that's like millions over a century. But nobody will notice because it's two people go missing. And that's how they're doing it. And Susan said on this vessel, she doesn't know if it's under the ocean, above the ground, on the moon. She can't tell you. But there was hundreds, if not thousands of women on there in different states of being harvested.
Wow.
And how many people are sat at home waiting for a loved one to come home? They don't even exist anymore. There's people out there waiting for their wives, their daughters, their sisters, their aunts, their friends, people from the community to come home. They ain't coming home because guess what? There's nothing left of them. And we don't know why.
You're reading my mind because I'm thinking why. I've been dying to share this with you as well. During the peak of our paranormal activity in our old home, I was really tired. I hadn't slept for about 5 days because somebody had to stay awake all the time while the rest of the family slept because Del, my husband, almost died. And I was just going to the store. I was in the car. Where I was at the lights, obviously I've lived in the city my whole life. I also, before I hurt my back, I was community visiting nurse. So I knew, you know, parts of rural areas and all kinds of things. There's a reason why I'm explaining this. I was at the lights. I should have been gone 3 minutes. I blinked, opened my eyes. My phone was ringing. I had lost over an hour. I believe it's almost an hour and a half. I was about, I want to say, I say 40 miles, so probably about 60 kilometers from where I was at those lights when I blinked. My car was in the opposite direction. I was in front of this half dome of a building. All the windows had been knocked out. I don't know where this was, and I should have known it. Like, that's why I brought up. I knew this area being a visiting nurse, and my phone was ringing. It was Del, my husband, saying, "Where the hell are you?" And I had to say, "I don't know." He's going, "What do you mean you don't know?" I said, "I don't know. I got to hang up. I don't even know. Obviously, I got cell service. I got to see where I am." I had no idea where I was. I still, to this moment, do not know what happened.
And that's common. On a previous show, it might have been the one I was on with Zach. I can't remember. A gentleman said he was driving out of New Jersey. Mm-hmm. He saw a light, mm-hmm. and within, he came to, and he was like 60 miles away. Mm-hmm. He was 60 miles away,
yeah,
and like an hour had passed, and he can't even remember getting
it. This is literally what I did. I blinked, and I was that far away. Like I said, my car was in the opposite direction of the way I'd been traveling. I'd never seen this building before. I don't know where. What it reminded me of is when I was a very, very, very small child, about 3 years old, my mother used to do accounting books for an Italian man in our city that had, like, it was an auto body shop, but it was like half a dome. But this was in the middle of the city. I'd never seen this building. It was like a half dome. It was abandoned. And if I'd still been going in the same direction I was going, I should have still been going forward. Well, my car was turned, I guess probably you'd say to the east rather than going, say, north. I have no idea to this day where I was or how I got there or anything.
It's so common. It is so common, that experience. And I mean, once I'd finished Susan's testimony in Harvest, the true story of alien abduction, while we were in the, you know, the editing phase, I just put a little shout out to people in Pembrokeshire. Could you give us, you know, could you give me your experiences? Mm-hmm. You know, and at the back of the book is, so in Harvest, the true story of alien abduction, you've got Susan's encounter and experience from beginning to when I left her in 2018. You've got a brief overview of everything that happened in Pembrokeshire from 1976 to 1982. And then you've got a little like bonus chapter of just people in Pembrokeshire's experiences. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I was sifting through them, and two of them were, one woman was driving down, like, so we're in Pembrokeshire, we're not in New York, we're not in a big city or anything like that. She's driving home, she blinked, she didn't feel well, and then she saw she was driving on the other side of the road, and she passed herself as she was having that moment. And then I had another one about 5-10 miles away, and the woman was so terrified, she had to pull over, and her husband had to come and pick her up. She couldn't drive, and she will not drive that road. And that was in the daytime. Both accounts were in the daytime. Now, one of the interesting things with Susan is, and again, very, very common, as things start progressing in Harvest, the True Story of Alien Abduction, there's lots of encounters from the beginning and how it get built and built and built. But one of the things I found very interesting is in Pembrokeshire, we have this huge waterway. It's called Milford Haven. It's Europe's second largest natural harbour, okay? And dotted all along the side of it are huge refineries and oil tankers and LNG gas and power plants. Very industrial part of the world. You know, you go out down to that part of the world. There's not many people living there, but you'll see these huge super tankers and these huge ships with these great golf balls full of LNG gas. So Susan, she'd had a couple of events which was making her ill, run down. She had pains, like severe period cramps. She was tired, nosebleeds, vomiting, diarrhea. And she was seeing a guy, and she just did not want to be on her own. So they went for a drive, and they went down to this waterway, and there's a fast food restaurant down there. I won't say where, but it was under the Golden Arches, all right? So they grab some food, and there's these little points, like little concrete harbours. You could just park up, you could see the estuary, you could see the tugs, the ships, the houses, have your food. People go fishing there, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, she was sat there, and the guy in the car noticed that there was a bright light, an orange bright light coming down the estuary, okay? And they thought it was a tug, or there's lots of lights. If you ever go to Pembrokeshire and you see that area, it literally looks like that opening scene from Blade Runner. It's just gas and fire shooting into the air and loads of lights and smoke, and, you know, it's a very industrious place. And this light was coming down, and they kind of ignored it, and then this guy was convinced this light was going to hit the car. And Susan describes it as if fire was trapped in glass. And this huge ball came down the estuary, hovered above the car. And she said it was almost as if the car was filled with static. And it just reminded me of that scene in Close Encounters when Richard Dreyfuss is looking up and everything in the car. It's almost as if the car is upside down. Gravity doesn't exist. And then this ball of light just shot off down the estuary, right? And okay, very interesting. And when I started digging, there was loads of UFO reports at night. There was witnesses seeing it from the other side of the river. Motorists saw it as well. And the orange light phenomena, this ball of light, this ball of fire and glass, you know, just to make it like an easier way to describe, it's been seen on the waterway going back 10, 20 years. People in my book who didn't know what I was investigating have said they've seen these orange lights. These orange lights have been seen 90 miles away coming in off the coast. And I guarantee your audience listening now, whether they're in Russia, Japan, America, Canada, I bet somewhere in amongst your audience, they've had these similar experiences with these orange lights. Now, if we go back in time to 1977, when that family, the mum was driving her kids in the car, they were chased by an orange ball of light, which killed the engine on the car as well. So Susan was trying to make sense of this. There was more than one alien. There was like a hierarchy. So to try and make sense of it, she just gave them little names. So there was these orange balls of lights, and she called them the shepherds, because whenever they were seen, there'd be an abduction experience. Then you had the controllers, and these were large, featureless, incredibly skinny arms and legs, skinny torso, and like a big, bulbous, smooth head, like almost like a motorcycle helmet on back to front. And then you had these bulbous jellyfish, bioluminescent things. I don't even know how to describe it, with on impossibly thin legs. And she had an encounter with what she thought was maybe a hybrid. It was basically a woman with incredibly large eyes and red skin. And that woman seemed to have the ability to stop time. So Susan's this, imagine you're Susan, right? She's not like me and you. She's not like Joe. She's not like your audience who got an interest in this. She has no interest in this whatsoever. And then she is pulled into this world that is abstract. It is surreal. It is confusing. It challenges every social paradigm she's ever known. It snapped the comprehension, the elasticity of her consciousness. It literally was the most horrific experience imaginable. And here we are, and nobody's doing anything.
I wanted to add quickly, Gavin, even though the fact, like you just said, you know what, that she had no interest in anything like this. I think when we even go back to the beginning of the story, you were talking, this is a girl that's been born into a family with a silver spoon in her mouth, a silver plate. She had everything. All she had to do was continue her final education, and she had it all. So who in their right mind would ever even consider something like this if it wasn't real or true for her, considering she had it made? Like, she had her life in the palm of her hands. Like you said, she had this beautiful life ahead of her. I think that in itself speaks volumes for what she's experienced, because you're reading my mind and thinking, who are these beings? I mean, we've heard about these different races, but I got to be honest with you. Joe might have heard of some of these beings before, but I certainly haven't ever before. Not that I'm an expert. The one thing I always ask people, and again, Joe's been doing this, I believe it's almost 30 years, a study of people with Rh negative blood and green eyes, because I guess that didn't exist in our DNA human genome up to about 70 billion years ago. So I'm finding a lot of people either with that type of blood type or within their family, a lot of people, because I know Joe and I've talked about this off the air, that it seems it runs in families. Like my mother, for example, does not believe in any of this stuff. Red hair, green eyes, Rh negative blood. I don't have any of those things. I've had this experience. I've probably had more. She's probably had them, because it seems to happen in families. So I wanted to ask you, did Susan ever mention, maybe the family never discussed it, like anybody else ever had any of these unusual experiences?
If anyone is psychic, Lorelei, you have proven it to me, because yes, Susan does believe. You said something earlier about that lady, you know, you'd signed a contract, you know, mm-hmm. It's in your blood, it's in your DNA, you mm-hmm. know, and I strongly believe that, because Susan, she believes that it's invested in her family, that her grandmother died. I don't want to give too many spoilers away, but basically, very quickly, Susan's auntie, when she's drawn into this, she dies horrifically of cancer. The family cat died after one night when it was attacked by one of these beings. It died the next day, horrifically ill. Like it died of cancer or flu or something like that, right? So Susan, when the visitors or the aliens, whatever you want to call them, the harvesters, whatever you want to call them, okay, these beings, when they were communicating to it, there was three particular nights where they were doing really surreal kind of experiments and communication, almost dreamlike, almost like these very strange, vivid, lucid dreams where... She was participating in a lucid dream, but there was lots of similarities. Mm-hmm. And on the first night, she was presented with her dead grandmother, mm-hmm. who was trying to reassure her that, mm-hmm. you know, these beings, you know, they just needed her for a short time. The second night, she saw herself as a little girl, and the little girl was her own self was communicating. It sounds insane. It sounds absolutely insane when you say it out loud. you know, Joe's probably sat there going, yeah, I've heard lots of these experiences. But like, you know, to a lot of people, it's going to sound so berserk, right? Mm-hmm. And this is why it's so important. I really want people to read Harvest, A True Story of Alien Abduction, right? Because the more people read it and talk about it and get in touch back with me, the more we can all investigate this. We can all put our spin on it. We can all try and interpret what Susan's going through. We can draw on our own experiences. And then maybe we can start to make sense of what's happening to it. And if we can make sense of what's happening to it, then we can go to our governments with a solid argument and say, do you know what? This is happening. You've got to stop. But anyway, Susan saw herself as a little girl, mm-hmm. and her little self was asking her questions telepathically, asking questions like, look, I'm going to ask you some questions now. If it was a fire, would you save mum or dad? And Susan would make this very quick reaction, and then this presence behind her would say, father. And she, in her mind, she'd be arguing with them, going, no, I wouldn't. I'd save them both. And then the little girl version of herself asked her through telepathy, if you were raped, would you enjoy it? And Susan was mortified by that, and she visualized it, and the horror, and this disembodied voice, you know, which she believed was like this presence behind her, said yes. And she was like, no, I wouldn't. She was effing and blinded and swearing and getting really upset mentally with this thing. And she feels like she was being, not only was she being physically abused, but they were putting her through some emotional and mental tests as well. And on the final night, which is something I've learned so much more since Harvest has been produced, amount of people who've had alien abductions, and we're talking about people who've had the positive alien abduction experience as well, not just a negative, they all seem to have this common similarity of being shown an apocalyptic vision or a premonition of a future where the world is on fire, the trees have burned. And Susan was shown that as well. She was shown Milford Haven Estuary bubbling and covered in burning oil, ships tossed around, raining ash, children melted, people burning, the town of Milford Haven, a huge crater with the ocean just steaming and boiling into it. And she has no idea why. And we can only speculate, are the alien beings saying, don't worry about what we're doing, it's futile because that's your future? Or are they saying, the reason we're doing this is because this is where you're heading? So if we are to believe that there is this cabal, this agenda, as Paul Anthony Wallace said in Escaping from Eden, right, as what you were saying before, right? What if, right, and this is just speculation, I'm just a guy, as I keep saying, I'm just a guy in Halford West Wales, okay? What if there's one side of this cabal are battling for us, saying, do you know what, these beings can be beautiful, they are creative. Think of the music, the art, the nurturing, the love. Think of what we are capable, what the amazing things we are capable as a race, right? What if the half of this cabal is saying, like, you know, we need to elevate them spiritually. We need to get them out of the quagmire of religion. We need to get them out of this broken political system.
I keep hearing we're a young race, like, because I'm very clear audience. So I keep hearing that we're such a young race. It's like having children playing with matches, toddlers. And you know, you'll hear about nuclear weapons and nuclear plants that all of a sudden will get shut right down, and there'll be UFO sightings all around there. There's certain parts of those races that I've heard that, yes, exactly what you've said, that they're for us, but we need to evolve. And I talk about this often as a spiritual teacher or mentor. Imagine if we had a race of children that were born right from infancy, were never told that nothing was possible, say that telepathy, anything like that is possible. You know, we can physically elevate ourselves, for example. I've seen, you know, tribes that have never been around humanity, and somebody discovers them, and they're spiritual guru, if you will, is elevated. No wires, nothing before a fire. But are we capable of that? We only use what, 20% of brains? Imagine if we used an extra 10%. So I hear you. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No. I think that was a really incredible point, right? Because we are capable of so much more. We only use 10 to 11% of our brain. People like you use a bit more, because I think the brain is like a radio, okay? So right. I am very empathic because I'm bipolar. That's why I think people enjoy my books, because you get that sense of fear, foreboding, anxiety, depression. You feel it. And the reason you feel it is because I'm living it, so I can take my feelings and put them on the page. So when people read my stuff, like Haunted Horror of Halford West, a very famous YouTuber did the top 10 scariest books of all time, which include like Stephen King and Faust and all that. Haunted Horror of Halford West is number one. She said it made her physically ill, how terrifying it was. Ghost sex violation. It was so upsetting to people. They were sending me death threats. They were so upset. They were so challenged by it. You know, it is what it is, right?
Don't kill the mailman. I mean, you're just recording. The other thing is, I knew you were empathic when you kept, that's why I kept saying to you a few minutes ago, don't just say you're just a man. And the beauty in it all too, even with bipolar, right? It's almost what fits with this world, right? We've got one part, we've got another part, but to bring it together as a whole, including the empathy and what you're feeling, I do have to say, I feel so sorry though that you've been so dragged down by it. It makes a lot of sense with a lot of stuff you've been doing to be that deeply empathic that you are, but obviously you're able to translate that into the bodies of work that you're creating.
And it helps the readers investigate more fully. It's not like, and he went in a room and the cat was floating off the table and the painting fell off the wall. With me, you get the full spectrum of feeling, what they were, you know. I bring the subjects back, right? I want to know everything. I want to know what they were eating, what they were dreaming of, what they were doing that day. So when you read my books, you get an investigation. You are the detective. You are the investigator from your armchair, whether you live in Hong Kong or Albuquerque, or if you live
just hearing no stone unturned when they read your book. So yeah. Any questions they might have, you've covered it. So it's almost like the reader is right there, like you said, right? Like they might as well be in the same room with what you've included in the books.
Yeah, I want to bring them in. And what I love, and I love it, it's probably one of the best parts of it, is when somebody gets in touch with me and they say, I've just read this and I believe that this happened because of that. And then I was like, yes, now I'm excited because I'm just one person and I tell you and you give me this information back, right? And Joe's in, he's giving me some information as well. And then Zach's listening and he's got some ideas, right? So now we're bouncing ideas off, right? If we could get whole pockets, catchments of communities all across the world to read something like Harvest, The True Story of Alien Abduction, and dissect it and become detectives, and then get back in touch with me and say, do you know what? The reason there was a fox, she keeps seeing a fox, is because of this. When I had my own abduction experience, I saw an owl because of this.
My McClelland, and about, had you heard this about anybody that's had a UFO experience, an ET experience, abduction experience? He's done a whole study of this. Whitley Strieber was at the same conference. That's how I had my introduction to Whitley too, about owls. I have a question in the chat room, but I got to hear about the owls now because I was thinking this like probably about 15 minutes ago. Oh my God. So you're seeing owls now?
Yeah, Susan saw there's two very distinct creatures that would be kind of part of the abduction experience. Now, what I found very interesting about Susan was, and this is why I took the case on, was that she could recall all of this without regression, right? She, as I said, she was highly intelligent. And I think that maybe she was.
Is she a hybrid?
I don't know.
I wondered that right from when you started describing her.
Very tall, very beautiful. Do you know what? Now you're saying it. When you look at the descriptions of like the Nords and the Blondes, she fits in perfectly. That I never made that connection before. As I said, I took this case on and it was kind of like little bits were being revealed, you know, little bits were being pulled back. So I was looking behind the curtain until eventually I had her testimony. And it's only after, when you speak to people, you get these. See, that's what I'm talking about. Was she a hybrid? Maybe she was, okay. So, whenever these red lights were around Shepherd and her, she would have visions of owls. And whenever there was a couple of times she would find herself walking in a field bathed in red light with, it'd start off one or two naked women walking through the high grass. Incredibly stark imagery. You know, if you're a very visual person, you know, a field of tall grass, these naked women, all nationalities, all ages. It was an old woman with dementia. She saw an African woman who's speaking like an African language. There's a German woman. There's a small child that she carried. That actually really made me very emotional at the time. Just thinking of Susan, a young woman herself, having to pick up a child lost and alone who didn't speak English. And eventually she would be in a herd of these women just walking across a field through the long grass like cattle. You see cattle walking across the field. It comes time when the farmer needs them to come into the shed or whatever, and they just all walk in a line, oblivious to what they're doing. And then Susan would say there would be a...
She wasn't. That's what made me from the beginning of the story wonder if she maybe was a hybrid. Maybe they may be as well, because I've been dying to tell you this. I don't mean to, we've got so much to talk about. My mind's
Do it. Please. This is amazing.
I have two friends. Both are very gifted psychically. One of them doesn't identify as a psychic, but has many, many odd, strange, incredible experiences. Quite a mystery in itself that she hasn't quite got with, but I've been working on this behind the scenes from time to time with her. She remembers waking up in a dream. She was abducted by the military and can describe it all. And then there's been ET experiences like this, and they were not happy that she woke up and remembered. The other friend, same thing. She's had implants. Her and her mother have been abducted together at the same time. Those implants have been removed, and guess what? They've gone missing. Nobody knows where they are. She too was waking up. She did not have anything close to a positive experience. Very gruesome. Yeah. A lot of people, like, they had been partially, maybe she woke up in something with harvesting. I'll have to ask her, because people were, I can't remember if she said it was both sexes. People in the midst of almost like an operation open up pieces.
Dissection.
Mm-hmm.
Dissection. Because you've got to think, right? They're treating us like animals. Mm-hmm. They treat us how we treat animals, right? And if we, like we were saying earlier about this battle, you know, you've got one side saying, you know, these people could be spiritually elevated to be so much more. You know, new energy sources, new forms of government, you know, turning our backs on our tribalistic nature where blacks got to fight white, gay versus straight, Muslim versus Christian. We can't help it. We can't help but fight each other, okay? Democrats versus Republicans, Brexit. You know, we can't help but fight each other. And until we elevate, you know, evolve, right? If we don't evolve, I was watching tonight David Attenborough's A Life on This Earth, right? And when he was like 33 years old, 68% of the wildlife still existed on the planet, right? And he's 93 now, like, and we're down to like 32%. And we've cut down 700 trillion trees. And he was crying, right? Because he'd gone, he discovered these creatures for the first time in the 1940s and 50s. And then they've gone now, they're extinct, right? And then the other half of the cabal, they're like, what's the point of trying to save them? They're just animals. They can't, they're killing the planet. They don't know what they're doing. They're adolescent, like you said. They treat us like animals, right? And they're experimenting, hybridizing, you know.
There's got to be a purpose, like to the harvest for the organs, or, you know, like you said, hybridizing. Is that why they're impregnating these women? And then it brings me back to the black-eyed and the white-eyed children. Are they hybrids? Or what are they? Like, there's just so many questions I have about all this. But you know what I say? Honestly, Gavin, I got to ask Zach's question too. More than likely, he's got a wonderful question. Have you read it?
Yeah, please, Zach.
But you know what? The more I open this door, the more how tinier than a one-celled organism I feel when it comes to the amount of knowledge. Because every time you open a door, there's a thousand other doors to open and go down. And like you say, some of them all start to connect if you can get the bigger picture, but it doesn't complete the circle, if you will. You're still, there's another path to go, another path to go, another path to go. It's nothing like real life. And I'm also realizing, I say, you know, when you've had a paranormal, ET, UFO, whatever it is experience, it's very isolating. It's not like you can be standing at the grocery store and be chatting to the person behind you about it. You're worried, fear of judgment, and for good reason, because unless somebody has lived this, been through it, or is open to even hearing other people's experiences, you're right. You get the trolls, you get the people, you know, it's like, why bother? If you don't believe in it, just move along. We don't need that negativity. Just move along. And there's too many people talking about this and starting to come out and open up about what's happening, that people can't be making it up. There's people having too many similarities. And you know what? Let's face it. When you've been doing this for a while, you can pick out in about 20 to 30 seconds when somebody is BSing you. You can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think with people, when they're honest and genuine, they're hesitant, they're coy, they're bashful, they're ashamed, they're embarrassed.
Embarrassed, yeah.
They're embarrassed.
Afraid.
They're afraid because they don't want to be judged. You know, yep. There was a day, Laura-Lee, before, you know, when you must have been like, it's like me being bipolar, right? I didn't know I was bipolar until recently, right? Mm-hmm. I just thought everybody thought like this, right? Mm-hmm. So imagine, and I'm not doubting you for a second, if anything, I think you're probably one of the most psychic people ever. It's like you're in my mind tonight. It's brilliant, right? Imagine what it was like for you as like, say, like a young child or a teenager, realizing that you're like, the brain is like a radio, okay? So my brain is like, it can pick up FM, but your brain is wired a little differently, right? So it can pick up FM and it can pick up AM. So you can maybe channel, receive information from the universe, the spirit world, dimensional worlds. You can maybe see colors more vividly or hear, feel emotions more powerfully. Right. Mm-hmm. Imagine how hard that was for you as a young person to go to school and go, hi, everyone, I'm psychic, because they would have bullied you and trolled you all through school and made your life a misery. Mm-hmm. So all these people with these amazing gifts and all these abilities and people who've had incredible encounters, both negative and positive, have had to keep it to themselves, because for 70 years we've been told that all this UFO stuff was a lie. That it was a falsehood, it was a fiction, right? That people who believed in it were crazy. They were nuts. They were weirdos.
I'm going to throw something out there to you, okay? You were able to see that imaginary friend that you called him, but then the adult seeing him, right? So he really, truly was an imaginary friend out who he was, and then he actually existed. Now, I've had this conversation with Joe off the air too, but he doesn't necessarily agree with me. But I truly believe everybody on this planet is capable of all of these gifts, and we see it in young children. We see, just as we have natural born mathematicians, athletes, musicians, whatever it may be, we all have a gift for something, right? But when we come in, you can see videos of this, of like an 8-month-old baby that's sitting there and following something around the room. They're laughing, giggling. Children can see it, pets can see it. I believe the reason why we can, all of us, is because we live in the now. Our work is play when we're young children, right? We're not embodied with adulting and worrying about money and all these other things and the negativity. It's just pure joy and love with small children, right? And most animals too, right? They're unconditional love. But as we get older, some people, I believe, hang on to it. Like, I didn't realize I had all these gifts as a small child. I do now. And I remember back to when I was a very small child. But what I'm saying is, I believe we all have those gifts. It's just almost like, say, for example, you said you were in sales when, you know, you were doing your day job as sales, for example, right? But now look at what you do now. And say you put your mind to something. Doesn't matter what it is. So we put our mind to it and we really want to do it. We may not be an expert at it. Say you want to be a singer, may not be an expert at it, but you can still go with work with a voice coach. You can do whatever you want, or an athlete or a sport. So what I'm saying is the same thing with these abilities, is that if people really want to tune into what they had as a small child or a baby, it's almost like putting that key into the lock, unlocking it. And I believe that everybody is capable of this. Everybody. I do. Like, I picked up right away that you're very empathic. I know you kept saying, I don't have any abilities. And I literally heard from Spirit, yeah, well, just wait for the end of the night. Because I think you are very intuitive. And
I believe that. I do believe you're not. Because 90% of our brain, we have no idea what it's there for.
Exactly. Or brain injury. People are able to create new neural pathways, always, 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 right into people with dementia. I mean, we've got other things contributing to that besides, you know, what's in our environment, what's in our diet. But if they, you know, even the medications, I think that some of them they're working with, or it's caught early enough, doing the brain gymnastics, for example, when you work on different areas of the brain, we've been very lucky with science that we know what part of the brain affects what, right? And we can gear those exercises if we had to create neural pathways, new pathways that may have been blocked, may have been damaged. Just very, very quickly, I have my youngest son has autism, severe autism, and he could not learn his phone number. But I knew enough about the brain that writing it, repeating it, trying to memorize it wouldn't work. But in aptitude for music, I knew that music and singing uses a different part of the brain. So we made up a song with a phone number. That child had that phone number within about 5 to 10 minutes. So that's what I'm saying. We're so pliable. We've got so much we don't know about our potential and things like that. I didn't mean to get off on a tangent.
No, I love it. That's what I, you know, like, that's what is great about a show like this and like Paranormal Soup as well and shows like this is that it's just a conversation.
Yes.
Two people with different views and opinions and ideas and philosophies, and we come together and then we meander off, we go off on tangents, and we come up with these ideas. It's a very, very safe place to be. You know, it's great for
me. Same as with the idea with the book, like you're saying, if you could get a group of people that had read the book. Now, it's a good friend of mine, Augie Noss, calls it the mastermind. You're all focusing on the same thing. You got 10 people in a room. He says you harvest the brain power of 100 minds. And I said, in the beginning, I said, how did you get to that? He goes, one person talks to 10, the second person talks to the other 10. So it's a 10 by 10 algorithm. So imagine that's the same thing that kept going through my mind with your book. Like you said, getting a bunch of people reading the book and then giving you feedback, giving you different perspectives. Well, because we're just one person. Yeah, we don't always see everything that's right in front of us, right?
Exactly. And there is a call for this book. There's lots of books out there about hybridization, alien abduction, but there is something right ingrained in us, right? Going back to our ancestry, right? We've known this has been happening since time immemorial, right? We were probably engineered. You know, I don't want to challenge anyone's religious views, right? But there's a very strong possibility, you know, just based on what you're saying about the green eyes and the blood samples and just the way things have evolved and how we are, right? You know, that's a whole different show. We could go down that rabbit hole all night long. It's great.
Well, I'm having you back for sure.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. And with Harvest, right, there's a real call for this, right? It's been number one in Britain and number two on Kindle. It was number one and two in the chat. So number one in paperback, number two in Kindle, right, in the top 10, right? It sold out 3 times in America. It's been number one on Kindle in Australia because people want this information, because we know deep down that this is real. You know, just different variations of it, positive, negative, that whole spectrum. And you were saying earlier about, you know, we keep opening these doors. And Roddy Piper, great, great wrestler. Right? I loved Roddy Piper. He used to say, just when you think you have all the answers, I go and change the questions, right?
Yes.
And that is exactly what our science is, right? Paranormal is part of the science. I don't care what people say. You know, we are discovering more about our universe. But every time we discover something, it just leaves a million possibilities. Pick up any book about the solar system, and they'll talk about the hexagonal storm on Saturn, and they'll say, yes, there's a hexagonal storm, but it remains a mystery to how it's formed. The universe is expanding at this amount of speed per second, but we don't know what it's expanding into. There are building blocks in the universe, which we are trying to find. It is just a theory. So there's all these things. And I like saying, and you said it as well, I long for the day when the paranormal is just normal. And in 50, 60 years, the way the soft disclosure is going, that the whole UFO dimensional being enigma is no longer an enigma. Maybe like our your son and his children, it'll be perfectly normal for them. Oh, look, Mum, there's a UFO. Yeah. There's an unidentified aerial phenomena flying past, right? And the big thing for me is, right, and this is kind of that quandary, like, what do we want from Harvest? What do we want from Susan's story? What do we want from Harvest, the true story of alien abduction, okay? For Susan, it was 2 points. It was cathartic and it was a warning. We know in our mythologies, we know in our histories, we know in our religions that there have been these beings come in for years and years and years doing stuff. Parts of the Bible, The Immaculate Conception sounds, for intensive purposes, to be artificial insemination. The Star of Bethlehem, whatever that was, it wasn't a star because it led the path of the three wise men. Jesus said on two occasions he was not of this earth. All these miracles, Jacob's ladder, Sodom and Gomorrah, it looked like a nuclear war. The Brahman records talks about flying gold planes and pyramids and this big battle. Yeah, and then they find irradiated areas in northern India, which look like they've been a nuclear blast.
I'm so glad you say this, because I talk about these things and people look at me like I've got 10 heads, because I've been talking about all this stuff. I want to get to Zach's question, because we're almost
done. Go, Zach. Yeah, get Zach's question. Sorry, Zach.
No, I knew I was going to have such a good time with you tonight. This conversation has been a couple years in the making, folks. So I'm going to be having Gavin back for sure, if he'll be willing to come back.
Yes, yes, anytime.
Okay, so Zach says, I have a question for Gavin. Has anyone ever reached out to you with similar stories to Susan's experiences? If so, what are the comparisons and the differences to their stories?
One of the people who reached out to me afterwards had a very similar experience, but it was all very, it was similar, not exactly similar, but it was all under when she was sleepwalking. Okay. So her husband would find her in the garden. Great question, by the way, Zach. You're an amazing guy, really cool guy.
I love him.
He co-hosted me
one night. I was going to tell you, he's done that for me when my co-host wasn't able to come. He's co-hosted with me. Sorry, go ahead.
No. Great. I'd send me the link for that. I'll listen to that. She fought when it's quite creepy, right? She's sleepwalking. Her husband finds her in the garden in Milford Haven, this area with all these refineries and stuff like that, the epicenter of this apocalyptic vision that Susan had. And her husband said to her, and she was stood there, and she came to. He said, "You all right?" She was like, "Yeah, can't you see the spaceship?" And she thought there was a huge spaceship just floating above the town. And then another gentleman, he had, same again, Milford Haven. He had a very difficult, he was getting really worried, very rational guy. He was interested, but he's very rational. He was believing there was visitors in his bedroom. He kept finding marks on his body. He was convinced there was a piece of metal in his earlobe. And one night, his phone, after he believed there was people in his room with him, his phone placed him for a couple of hours or minutes, I believe it was, 200 miles off the coast of Papua New Guinea. He lives in Pembrokeshire, West Wales. A lady walking her dog up the Cledi River, which is about 3 minutes walk from my house. She claimed she saw an orange ball of light, like a flame within glass. She didn't know anything about the testimonial at that time, going up the river and leaving a trail, a wake behind it. So I think that what was ever happening in Pembrokeshire in the 1970s and 80s, that never went away. And chances are it's always been here. So amazing question, Zach, because there's parts of the story, but in individuals, and they're only recalling little bits. But if you were to put all of that together, then you've got a very, very similar experience to Susan. And some of that is covered in the last chapter of Harvest, The True Story of Alien Abduction.
Wow. We've got 4 minutes left. Please come. You know what? I want to give you huge props too. What time is it over in Wales right now?
2:50. It's fine.
Okay. I'm up all night long myself half the time, but I want to give you huge props for being on here, because I'm going to have you on. We've got so much to talk about. We barely scratched the surface. So how can people get a hold of you? Gavin, want them to know all about where to get your books, your podcasts. You've got a group, you said, and page on Facebook and...
First of all, right, because I know we've only got limited time, if anybody out there, I actually work in publishing. I work for John Hunt Publishing and Six-Books, which is the number 6th-books.com, right? We've got loads and loads of amazing paranormal books on mediumship, UFOs, ghosts, right? So if you enjoy reading, go over there, right? But the big but is, right, if you are an author, if you are writing a book like Lorelei, then please, you know, we are taking on submissions. So I would love to work with people and help your writing dreams come true. So, you know, I want to encourage people to write, especially during this lockdown era. You know, if you've got stuff you want to get off your chest, right? Now, Harvest, A True Story of Alien Abduction, is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Hive, Kindle, wherever books are sold. You can go to John Hunt Publishing. You can find it on there. My brand is theparanormalchronicles.com. Loads of articles, podcasts, YouTube stuff I've done in the past. The magazines are on there somewhere, which Lorelei had written in. Facebook, just go to The Paranormal Chronicles. Everything has got a wolf motif. Awesome. We've got the Paranormal Chronicles group, The Paranormal Chronicles like page, at Paranormal Chron on Twitter, and The Paranormal Chronicles on Instagram. Please join that, because there's some really nice pictures of Pembrokeshire to give you a feel. But Lorelei, Joe, Zach, the entire audience, everyone listening, thank you so much for giving me this platform to discuss something that is really important to me. I have a very strong...
We had so much in common. Like I said, yeah. Please come back. I'm going to be contacting you.
Yes.
Well, we still chat from time to time. I know you email me. You've sent me some other great ideas for guests. I need to get a hold of them. You know what I've been doing? I'll tell you quickly. I'm setting up my office finally / craft room in the spare bedroom. So it's almost done. So I can get back into the regular things I'm doing.
You know what? Do you know what, Laura? I'll take you up for your invitation every month or two. You know, we'll come on and we can talk about the ghost sex stuff. We'll have that interview we didn't have 2 years ago.
Yes.
And we'll continue down the rabbit hole on Harvest. But also, I'd love to hear more about your experiences and Joe's experience and Zach's experience. I'd love to hear more of that as well.
Absolutely. I can't wait. I want to remind everybody, my partner in crime and my bestie, Seraphine Hurley, and I do Tripping the Void tomorrow night here, right here on UPRN on Tuesday nights from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Central Standard Time. It's an hour later than this show. She's off right now. So the guest I was supposed to have on last Monday, he came down with a illness, unexpected. He's going to be on tomorrow night. You do not want to miss this show. Juan, and I want to make sure I get his last name right. I know him. He's amazing. He's a fellow Canadian. He's worked in the military for almost 34 years. He's now no longer in the military. He's dropped everything in Canada, moved to Ecuador because of what he believes is coming. Juan Antonio Manzor, he goes live off his Facebook page sometimes. This guy is a guest you guys do not want to miss, just like Gavin. He's going to be talking about what he knows from a military perspective worldwide. He's been overseas, what he believes is coming with everything that's been going on. It's going to be one heck of a show. So we will see you tomorrow night. And again, Gavin, thank you so, so much.
My love to you, your family, to Joe, to everyone. Thank you so much. I am truly humbled. Thank you so much. Please keep safe.
Thank you. Have a great night, everybody. And thank you to everybody in the chat over on Twitch. Hope to see you there again tomorrow.